last year and a half has taught us anything, it's that humans want and need to connect. We're not-for-profit professionals supporting adults to live, work, and grow in a rapidly changing world. We need each other to build full plans and pathways for our clients so that they can achieve life-changing goals. Whoever and wherever you are, if you support adults in learning and life, the Getting Connected podcast may be for you. Grab a coffee, give us just a few minutes of your workday, and let's connect. Hi, listeners. This is the Getting Connected podcast. I'm Ashley Hoth Murray, and I'm solo hosting today. This is a unique episode. Typically, we brainstorm show ideas, connect with guests, refine the topic and talking points, and record 4 to 6 weeks in advance of airing. Today's topic came to me on Sunday night. I connected with our guests on Monday. We're recording on a Saturday afternoon, and this will air on Tuesday. So what is the special topic we're diving into today? The skills necessary to successfully support the online learning of our kids. We're wrapping up the end of this stint of lockdown learning with the kids returning to in-person on Monday. We were thrown into this round after the holiday break. As the mom of 3 kids, 2 who are school-aged, I can tell you that I earned a few new gray hairs this week. I pulled my kids from school and I homeschooled them during the 2020-21 school year. They returned in person to school last September. Online learning was new to us, minus the emergency round we half-heartedly completed in March 2020. This week, we've had tech issues. The internet went down for 2 hours, and the school restricted the downloading of a required app on their school-provided tablet. I've dealt with digital skills gaps. What is Clever, Dreambox, LMS, Duolingo, and all the other apps that are required to be successful in grade 2 and grade 4? I've dealt with knowledge gaps. Are all fish cold-blooded? And soft skills issues. I don't know how anyone can possibly master managing their own work schedule while balancing the million class and app changes necessary for 2 children. Luckily, I'm not alone in this. And I do have the tech skills to connect with wonderful friends who are also screaming into pillows while attempting to learn all the things they didn't know for the sake of their kids' education. 4 of these moms have agreed to share their experiences with you today to highlight the immense list of skills required to support their kids' online learning. Not in any particular order, we're joined today by Julia Lillicrop, mom to 3 school-aged kids ranging from grade 2 to grade 8. Julia is a former teacher who runs a before and after school program, as well as the most wonderful summer camps prior to COVID-19. To say she was an active volunteer at the school before COVID doesn't seem to showcase the amount of support and effort she provided to the community. With numbers on the rise in September 2020, she pulled her 2 younger kids from public school for the 2020-21 school year and supported her middle schooler with online learning. Her family bubbled in a homeschool pod when the numbers were lower to help give variety and camaraderie during the longest parts of the pandemic isolation. My family was lucky enough to be part of that pod. Cynthia Belaski is the managing director of the Canadian Housing Evidence Collaborative at McMaster University. She co-hosts the Best Evidence podcast, a show that dives into academic research around housing issues in Canada, only to shake off the excess and deliver the real and relevant facts to her listeners. She is the mom to 2 very spunky elementary students who have learned both online and at home throughout the pandemic. Her husband teaches at Ryerson University, and they have both been balancing working from home for the last few years. When the world gets difficult, she's been known to craft with and without her kids, and work school spaces often sparkle with glitter. She can also be found on the ice and is the World Masters Winter Games gold medalist in ladies 2 freeskate and interpretive. Rebecca Smiley is the head of debt operations and deputy head of Christians Against Poverty, an international charity. She supported her two older elementary kids through pandemic learning while purchasing and renovating a new home during the COVID crisis. She's worked at home for most of the pandemic, although returned in office for a short time. Her husband's work was deemed essential, so she has been the only support at home during school hours when the kids have moved online. Her kids have always been registered for in-person learning. Both have been quarantined for close contacts at school, meaning Rebecca has had to support at home during those times as well. She decided her plate was not full enough and added a puppy, Bruce, to the mix near the beginning of the pandemic. Jackie Catterick isn't a first-time guest to the show. She was actually our first guest. She is the executive director of the Niagara West Adult Learning Center. I've had the pleasure of working with Jackie for almost 15 years in different roles, including when I started at Literacy Link Niagara. I knew she could bring perspective to today's topic because she is the mom to three wonderful children in middle school, high school, and one who recently graduated and is currently working online. We will lean on Jackie in today's episode to highlight some of the specific literacy-related skills gaps that many parents face when supporting the online learning of their children. So let's dive in. I'm going to ask Cynthia the first question. There have been four periods of time where online learning was an option, or I guess not an option. The emergency move that we all made in March 2020 when we didn't return for March break, the 2020-21 school year, the 2021-22 school year that we're currently in, and after the break, January 2022, where we currently are. Refresh for our listeners what your family did in terms of online learning, how they were learning, and what made you choose these options.
Thanks so much, Ash. Thanks for having me. So our family chose to keep our children in school in person as much as possible. So any time that in-class, in-person learning was available, it's something that we did with our kids. We didn't do it lightly. It wasn't something that we were able to do without a lot of thought and a lot of decision making, a lot of money spent on different kinds of masks, different kinds of hand sanitizers, all of that sort of thing. And then there was one period in the fall of the 2021-22 school year where we kept our girls at home because they had COVID symptoms by the time we ended up being able to get them tested, by the time the results came in. They'd been out of school for nearly 2 weeks at that point, and we just realized that it was a lot easier to have the girls learning something at home with an extended network of grandparents who could help with their learning than it was to have them in school, potentially coming home with runny noses and coughs that most elementary kids do get in the fall, and then them not being able to see their grandparents. And so all of the learning and caregiving was then based strictly, in the nuclear family. And doing that and working to, a full-time job for both my husband, it just wasn't possible. So we kept the girls home for that period and did very irregular kind of at-home learning. There was nothing really structured about it. And most recently, we in the January, not returned to the classroom. The girls obviously were at home, and this time it was the exact opposite. They were incredibly focused. They knew how to use their online tools. They did most of the whole school day, every single day. And it went so smoothly. I had a completely different perspective on what online schooling could be. And I think it's, probably practice plus age, that they're at an age and stage where they were ready for it. And that we also, as a family, were in a better position to know what we needed to support them get through that, that rough transition back online.
Yeah, because they're grade 2 and grade 5, right?
Yeah, they're great. And yes, exactly. And if we'd had this conversation a year ago, I would have told you I'm failing grade one and grade four currently. And I don't feel like I'm failing those grades anymore. Well, now they're two and five. And I'm really happy to say that I don't feel like I'm failing anymore.
Well, that's good. That's a plus.
Yeah. Progress, not perfection. That's our motto in this household.
Awesome. Well, Julia, how about you? Can you refresh our listeners on how and where your family was learning over the last few years and why you chose these options?
Yes, thank you for having me, Ashley. In 2022, when everyone was sent home at March break, we did what I guess you would call online learning. Obviously, everybody was just thrown into that, including the teachers. And when I think back, I can't even really remember what that looked like. I remember some circle times for my grade one and my grade three at the time.
I'm going to jump in for 2 seconds.
Yes.
I remember how this started. This started with you watched my two-year-old in the morning so that I could volunteer. This is the Friday before March break. You watched he wasn't two at the time. He's two now. My young child, so that I could volunteer at the school. I came home to your house to pick up my son and shared the news that we heard that the schools were going to send home these packages.
Yeah. And you said it's chaos over there. So I called
you, said, you went need help? And spent the afternoon printing all of the first pieces of homeschool online, whatever we're going to call it, emergency learning
that the school sent home. That. Day, how crazy it is now, because at our school, as most schools, it's this tiny little photocopying room. And I saw every staff member multiple times in this small space that you would never put yourself in that situation at this now. Like it would seem crazy, but we were just running. I was there for, I think, over 4 hours, just pumping these out. And the bell had rung and there were kids standing at the office waiting for their package to be home for 2 weeks.
Yeah, it's amazing that how far we've come. Sorry to jump in. I just wanted to share that.
No, it's hard to think back because we're almost at year three. So that seems such a, I remember one day with my grade three, she was the only one in the class with the other teacher. So we just had a chat and laughed. It was so like not online at that point. And then like Ashley, we were able to pull our kids and not without great thought and debate of socializing and them not being with their friends. It was like everyone, no one made these decisions easily. In some ways, I almost wish I had no other choice, that I had to send them, because then it's like, well, that's what we have to do and there's no other choice. But even with that, there's always like, should I have done that? Or it was a lot of back and forth, like every single parent, it was horrible. And you're doomed if you do and you're doomed if you don't. And it was not an easy choice, but in the long run, it was a great choice for our family. So I was able to keep them all home. I homeschooled our two youngest. So that would have been a grade one and a grade four at that time. And my grade seven did online, and it was actually his best year. He had a fantastic, strong teacher, but I will admit when I filled out all the surveys about how online's going, I skewed it to not going well because I knew our situation was not what everyone else was experiencing. It was not great from what I hear for other people, but he really excelled. But he's just an easygoing kid and it just worked. He's great in class and online. So he did fine, and it was a great year for me to have the two younger home, because now I really know a lot more about how they learn. And I was glad when it was done, but it was sad when it was done too. Mm-hmm. Bittersweet. And then we've been online for January, and I think a lot of the kinks have been worked out. It's been fine for us so far. And it's Saturday and they're supposed to go back on Monday, and we still haven't decided what we're doing. So,
oh, interesting.
And is, yeah. I am opening my before and after program still, but I may keep my kids home for the first week just to see what happens.
And
just
can you
in other provinces and stuff. So
can you expand a little bit on why you would keep them home?
So just the consistency and look at other provinces. They shut down in 2 days because of, I think it's going to be due to staffing, not even so much the numbers, but when you have things on the list as headaches or runny noses, that's pretty much every kid who comes in Ontario right now inside the classroom. And teachers are going to have headaches just being back in the classroom under those lights, different environment. I think within a week we'll be out of staffing. So I think we're going to hold, back. That could be completely different. I think everyone is the same. It depends at what moment you ask me in the day about anything. So it's like, can I see a friend outside? No, but I have no good reason why. It's just a gut thing. So, and then you ask me 5 minutes later, I was like, of course, that'll be fun. So I think we're just all over the place. And the one thing I've learned is there doesn't have to be any rhyme or reason. You just, so much of it is gut right now. And just like, this is what feels right at this moment. And I have the right to change it at any time. And so
interesting. Yeah, very, very interesting. So Becca, where and how did your kids learn or are your kids learning right now? And why did you make those choices?
Yeah. Thanks for having me, Ash. It's such a tricky thing, isn't it? Because I'm listening to Julia and to Cynthia and thinking, wow, I had such a different experience. So because of the type of work I do, our service delivery hours kind of fall in school day hours. And I've worked full time throughout the whole thing. And because my husband's job was deemed essential and he's not able to work from home, we actually didn't ever feel like we had a choice. Pulling our kids wasn't ever going to be an option because we didn't have the capacity to be able to support them. And so when they initially went online, I kind of entered into this phase where I just felt like it didn't matter what I did, I wasn't doing enough. So I felt very, very isolated because some of the people that I was the very closest with were part of that pod, and it wasn't ever going to be an option for me. And so from early days in the pandemic, it was a very emotional experience for me because what I had learned that was my community was just all of a sudden gone. It wasn't accessible to me anymore because we weren't able to isolate and or make those types of decisions. I would say that I felt very powerless. I have two fairly well-regulated kids for the most part and had made some predictions sort of around which of my kids was going to find that online school was more doable. And I actually, when I got into it, the opposite was true of that. So my son, who I thought was very adaptive and really easygoing, is actually the one who struggled the most, whereas my daughter, who's very academic and very studious, she adapted okay in the beginning. What I will say has been very, very tricky is the inconsistency. So it's been really, really hard to establish a routine. It's been really, really hard to keep the kids focused because when they need my help, I'm not always available to help them. And so I did often feel like my kids were missing out on what some of the other kids were able to participate with. So I think Frank was in grade two, I guess, when all of this started. And I would, you know, at times when I would see his screen, I'd see all his little friends and their mom or their parent sitting beside them, walking them through that. And I wasn't able to do that because I needed to focus on working full time. And so I did feel very much like my kids got the short end of the stick sort of on both ways. And so similar to what Cynthia has said, we made the decision to have our kids in person as frequently as we could. My daughter suffers with a great deal of anxiety. And so being away from her peers, she found very, very difficult. And we learned as well that my kids really adapt to the environment around them. So they do a lot of peer-to-peer learning, which I hadn't expected of them. And so my son in particular took a lot of his social cues and a lot of his execution of direction came through watching how his peers would work through things. And so he would often come out and he would say, Mom, you know, I would say, are you on a break, buddy? He'd say, no, it doesn't matter because no one knows I'm there anyways. And so he just felt very, very invisible. And I had often joked that, oh, you know, the world could kind of collapse around him and he wouldn't notice. And that's when I realized that actually wasn't true, that he actually really does value the community that he's part of. And this most recent September, they actually started in a new school. Frank was in school for 2 weeks and then went into isolation. And so that really, really impacted how he was able to connect with his new community. And it took him, I would say probably 4 or 5 months before he came home and finally said, hey, Mom, I have some friends at school now, because it was sort of those key times where they had switched he was new school, new teacher, was in a portable for the first time. And then all of a sudden they were in isolation and they were online. We'd had an open house that was supposed to happen that had to get canceled. And so it just felt like they sort of were dealt disappointment after disappointment. And there wasn't anything that I could do to stop it.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
As you were saying, like right from the beginning, you didn't have the you felt like you didn't have the option. And, you know, you're watching all these things happening to your children, and you are just in a reactive state because you don't have the opportunity to be proactive, to make those choices. You guys have had, with your isolation, quite a bang start to this.
Yeah. So we're hoping they go back on Monday. And if schools really do open, we will continue to keep them in person as often as they can. We're fortunate. Both of our kids are old enough to at least have had their first vaccine. They'll be able to get their second one. Luke and I have been very fortunate and are fully vaccinated. And so it feels like we're doing all of the things we're supposed to do, but it still feels very unpredictable.
Yeah. Checking all the boxes. Yeah. Anyway, Jackie, you're the last to answer this question. So you're a little bit different because your kids are just a little bit older than most of ours. So where have they been learning, and how's that been? Why was that the choice?
So all three of my children were online. One was in grade 7, one was in grade 12, and the other one was at university. And they all had completely different experiences. My youngest, who is very introverted, loved every minute and actually had a really rough time switching to back in person in September.
Interesting.
She preferred online. Her grades were much better. She had this great connection with her teacher, which a very almost one-on-one, because she focused on him and not what all the other kids were doing. So she did well. She participated well. I was also teaching online at the same time. So when she had a break with her class, she would come down and join my class, participate in the discussion. For her, March to September in school was wonderful. No problems. My son, who was in grade 12, it was rough. He's the group of kids that had the teacher strike, had to cross the picket lines, and then boom, online school. For grade 12, which was, it was heartbreaking because he wasn't getting the social part of grade 12. And I could see it. He is the extrovert in the family. He needed that friendship. And because they put everybody in cohorts, it was the same people all the time, not necessarily his buddies, not his girlfriend, which was very upsetting to him. And it was the same subject for like 5 weeks at a time. And they go to Catholic school. So he had religion, grade 12 religion, for 5 weeks straight, for 6 hours a day. And he was bored. Many times I would walk in and his head was on the desk and he was banging his head because it was just boring. And by the time he got to January, he actually took a spare for a month and did not go to school for a month. So it wasn't ideal for him, not to mention the lack of a graduation and no prom, things like that.
And we expect for my so much oldest, of them, right? We expect so much of our older kids. Like, you know, you know, your grade 2 is not going to sit in front of the computer all day, but a grade 12, we just assume, you know, they're an adult or almost an adult. So they should be able to do these things. I think you've just given our listeners just some great examples of how, you know, skills were tested and, you know, mental health was tested for our older kids.
And because his breaks were different than mine and I was teaching online, he had to cook his own lunch, get his own breakfast, right? It was a good learning experience for him.
My oldest
was in university. And that's a completely other online learning experience. Probably the worst. I don't know if you want me to get into what he experienced.
Yeah, just share a bit. It's all kids supporting kids online learning. So it'd be interesting to have.
So we all know that the teachers were kind of thrown into it. I was thrown into it as a literacy instructor. And as we teamed up together, we got through it. We shared ideas. University professors just gave up. Literally, he spent all this money on his schooling to have a professor just not show up. Wow. He had a course where grades were never given and assignments were lost. It was horrifying.
Yeah, that's very
disappointing. Back in school as of last week. And he said to me, Mom, I just got a note on Zoom saying that there's technical difficulties in my computer class. So his computer professor couldn't get over the technical difficulties of doing an online class in year two. So yeah, it was probably the worst experience.
Yeah, well, I don't have any experience of that. I do know some people that are in it on the other side. And man, it's been a strong learning curve. Yeah. So that's super disappointing though, to not have somebody like show up.
And as an online instructor, it really did get thrown at us. We had no skills. We had a little bit of Google Teams, but then we ended up using a platform called Moodle. And then when our free Moodle subscription ran out, we had to switch to, oh goodness, it might've been Zoom. It's all gray to me now, and have to relearn everything, including teaching the students everything. So parts of it, yeah, have been interesting.
Yeah, lots of pivoting. I could do a whole podcast with educators and the skills required to teach that. Maybe I will be sourcing.
There you go. Some
future guests. Anyway, thank you very much for sharing your stories. I do have a question, and I'm going to ask anyone who wants to start. So the question is, what has been the most frustrating thing about online learning? And I know you've shared some, but either share some more or give us a little bit more info. Who wants to start? Cynthia?
I can start with this one. I think the most frustrating, I feel like there's a recipe for the most frustrating thing. And it's like, it's when a certain type of child personality meets with a parent's personality and a teacher's personality, and all those things you add on everyone's sort of technical ability, plus the school schedule. Because I remember I was very clever in the beginning, and I tried to put my children's schedules into my day so that I could sort of work my meetings around, so that I wouldn't have a meeting when they were on break and, you know, whatnot, or I could help the little one switch from one class to the next, because she couldn't read yet. So for her, or, you know, and neither of them are really telling time before this. And so I thought, oh, you know, we can do this. Like, my husband can be upstairs doing a 3-hour lecture and I can totally handle this. No, you can't. The schedule can be so, and I can only imagine with something like what Jackie's going through, like high school schedules would be like, obviously they can read and tell time by this point, but, you know, making sure that your child is actually online and not playing the hot new video game, you know, well, online learning, not just playing the hot new video game. That kind of surveillance and timekeeping for your child is so intense, and it really doesn't jive well with a 9-to-5 or an 8:30 to 4:30 workday. I think that's one of that to me, scheduling, huge, huge frustration. And the other thing is attendance. That attendance is still kept. And so if you have a like glitch in your internet service and your child is not on when their name is called, or they like go to the washroom because they're at home and they can just get up and go whenever they want or whatever, all of a sudden I'm in a meeting and getting a call from the school that my child is marked absent and I haven't provided a reason. Where's your child? Why isn't your child online? And I'm like, because we're doing our best and she was hungry or the internet stopped working or whatever. And now instead of dealing with said situation, I'm on the phone. And that, so those two things, scheduling and attendance, like the idea that we have to still follow the same notions of time, super frustrating for our family.
Yes. Yes. So frustrating. I can echo. I understand that we're following a school day, very frustrating with these breaks, that there's still the two nutrition breaks. This week was very difficult to line up. And we've only done it for the week. So yes, yeah. I feel you, Cynthia. Becca.
Yeah, I think very similar to you, Cynthia, is the reality of my workday needs to continue despite what's happening at school. And so for me, it was the constant interruptions and trying to navigate that. And I felt like I do a lot of external meetings, either with other practitioners, other professions. My organization is a multinational organization. So some of my calls are international calls where other people have had to make adaptations around timeframes because we're working on different hours of the day. And just the accessibility that my kids had to me was really, really difficult. And having to explain to your children that they can't access particular parts of the home that they live in at certain times was really challenging. So where we were prior to this was open concept. Where we live now is very open concept. My office is unfortunately in the living room because that's where there's space for a desk. And because although I'm in my bedroom today, during my workday, it doesn't feel appropriate to be on a Zoom call with external service providers being like, here's my bed, I'm in my bedroom. And so it's that just constant interruptions and accessibility. And while my kids are now in grade 4 and grade 6, and they have gotten better at it, this is their home. And they've really had to sort of tiptoe around their own home. And that's been very difficult, I think, for all of us to establish those boundaries. And I think also just feeling like there's no break. So my day is get up, get the kids ready, log on, available to the kids all day, log off. But I haven't left my physical space because I'm still working from home. And so there's never a time in my day where I'm off unless I have physically removed myself from the rest of my family and come to hide away, which feels quite selfish, I will say, even though it's not. So I would say that has been one of the biggest challenges, that there's just no off. There's no switch. That 5-minute commute to work, I would love to have back.
Yeah, there's just no space, right? Like it's just everyone is with you all the time. Yeah. Jackie, I think you had something to say.
Very similar to what Rebecca had to say. So all four of us were learning at the same time, or I was teaching, and the noise factor was an issue. And my house is a pretty good size and each child was in their own bedroom. But when you're a part of a discussion that's very animated, which I am very animated, usually when I'm teaching, they would yell down, "Mom, be quiet. My class can hear you." Or I would hear, "Christopher, Meg, shut up." You know, we overlapped each other. Sometimes we had some technical difficulties where, you know, there was a lag and then someone would start yelling, "I need help." And yeah, that was frustrating. I felt unprofessional at those times. And at first I felt really unprofessional when my daughter would interrupt my class, plop herself down, but the students got to know her real quick, so it was okay. And the parents of the students would often interrupt, and that was very frustrating too. There was no mute at first, and thankfully I learned how to mute everybody. So, yeah. So it's both sides.
Yeah, it's a whole new set of skills that we're learning, and we're like learning on the fly. We just have had to adapt. I had I had an issue this week where my son started walking around the house with his tablet, and he was live with his teacher in his class, and I was ducking because I did not look like I had been awake for very long, although I had. It was just not the way that I would want a teacher to see me. Because of course we haven't even had parent-teacher interviews. So they don't know what I look like on a regular day. And this was not the day I wanted to be seen. So it's that space, accessibility, you know, where's the line piece? Julia, how do you feel? What's frustrating?
It's funny because I can touch on like everything that everyone has said. So going back to Cynthia, she was talking about just the expectations of your child, your teacher, yourself. I found that very frustrating and was one of the reasons why we decided to go on our homeschool last year. Because I remember thinking, okay, what does the teacher need from them? What am I able to get them to do? And keeping track of three kids of what assignments are due. It was just, I wasn't playing that game. I couldn't do it. And then you have kids who normally really excel in class and are like, of course I can do these math questions, and then don't understand why they're falling apart. They've been sitting all day. They haven't had the interaction with their friends, but they're not old enough to compute all these things that are going on in their little brains. They just know this is not good. This, I don't feel like myself. And then you don't feel like yourself. So everyone's just a hot mess. So I found that really frustrating, having to deal with everyone's expectations. It was all, and everyone's just like, what level of bad are you at? Is what it seemed to always come down to when we're doing online. And I think just kids having to self-regulate more than they know how to or should have to at this point.
If I can jump in on that one, that point that Jackie was making on the professionalism or the blurring of public and private. This is something that I've found really impacted my, has really, really impacted my life. And, you know, and also with those external meetings that we have that are on Zoom, right? Because you can't just have a phone. 50 years ago, we would have just had a phone call and that would have been fine. The same business would have happened. But now, no. We have to be able to see each other and we have to sit in this one space and you get to see my background, or it's blurred, or it's a green screen, or whatever. All of which tell, you know, tell novels worth of information about the person who you're speaking with. And it's, we never gave permission for this level of public and private to kind of collide, right? Like, I don't need my colleagues hearing my husband parenting in a frustrating moment, which may have elevated volumes involved, for instance, right? Like, we don't need someone to hear that the toilet's clogged and that, you know, like all of these things that you're in the midst of being professional and you have a very private thing happen and it's happening in front of an audience. And I find that is an incredibly challenging thing. And I also find it exhausting, right? Because I'm professional now. And then this goes back also, Jackie, to the noise thing, right? Like, oh, there's a noise in my background. Is it an emergency? Do I have to deal with it? Do I not? I have one kid who's like an involuntary singer. I didn't know this was a thing. Google it. It is. And so all of a sudden, you know, I can be in a meeting and now all of a sudden there's like a full song going on. And it could be about math in French and, you know, and she's just doing it. And, or a kid, you know, decides to answer a question. Awesome. This is what we want. Our kid is online learning. She's answering a question, but that interrupts my train of thought. So I'm, you know, like you're just constantly switching in a way that you don't have to when you're in a regular office environment, or even if you're working at home in a quiet house with there not being children. Like, we are not working in a way that is designed to have domestic interference, right? Like, that is not how our days are designed. And that's, I think, one of the problems. Like, we are not in cottage industries, right? Like, where I'm at a spinning wheel, and if I get tired, my oldest daughter can take over the spinning wheel, or, you know, whatever. But, you know, I can spin all night while my husband sleeps. Like, that's not the kind of work we're doing anymore. It's not made for family involvement. And that's just a, that's just something that's so hard for me to grapple with on a daily basis and to wrap my head around and to not get mad at. I really get mad at that idea.
Yeah. Where do I where do I end and where do I begin in terms of work and life, and what is work-life balance? Is that even a concept? Is that concept dead now?
Is it dead? And what do I owe? Do I owe the people on the Zoom call me to look professional? Do I owe these people, do I have to be pretty for the meeting? No, I owe them my intellectual power. That's what they're paying me for. And that's, I think, especially as a woman, a really hard thing to come to terms with, is that you know what, you've called me on Zoom unannounced. I'm turning on my camera to deal with you and I'm in a pajama top. Suck it up. That's how it's going to be. I do not have to be pretty for you in this moment.
And there might be a soundtrack.
I'm still smart. And there might be a soundtrack
going on in the background.
Yeah. And you might learn where the plunger is for that clogged toilet in my house, which may be helpful if you ever get to come over to my house. Because apparently we have a problem with our plumbing. Anyhow, I digress.
Super frustrating. I know that Julia is also still frustrated and has something to say about that. So,
well, I had forgotten what I wanted to say was, even though I'm at home, when I was working this week online, I was helping my youngest one read, and I would help him. And then I would turn around and be like, what was I doing? We got to the end of the week. The house was completely killed. And I was thinking about those like you that have a job to then switch back, mentally to go to your family and then back and forth. My husband took the kids skating last night. I stayed home and cleared the deck as much as I could. It's still a disaster down there, but I was able to shift and do that. But if you are being paid and don't have a boss who is going to allow those kind of in and out in your brain, I don't know how people, you guys are the example of how you're switching back and forth. Mine was the kitchen never got done, even though I was two steps away from it, but I kept being interrupted. And you're like Cynthia saying, our brains are not meant to be supposed to be tasked and then family and then one or the other, but in and out is just, it's too much.
Yeah. Yeah. Becca, I'm going to give you the final thought on this question and then we're going to move on.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I would say that my other thing that's been quite frustrating and difficult is the nature of the type of work I do. So I work with individuals who are in financial need and in distress. And because I'm working from home, those difficult and challenging conversations are happening in my home. So there's not a space to leave that behind in. And I'm trying to have sometimes very sensitive conversations with clients in a way that upholds and respects all of the requirements to protect their own privacy as well, while there's life kind of happening in the background. And I don't think that I've found another time in my adult life where I've done so much apologizing for the circumstance that I find myself in, even though I know it's outside of what I'm able to control. But because my heart and my desire is to protect my clients and their dignity and honor their experiences, that's easy to do from an office. It's challenging to do in my living room when my daughter's in tears because she doesn't understand something that the teacher has assigned for her to do. And lending that emotional support to two people at the same time or simultaneously while not allowing one to hear what the conversation is challenging. And I think similar to what Cynthia said, having my parenting on display, I feel very pressured to respond in a very specific way with a very calm and quiet and loving approach to my children, which is, I think, how I would love to approach parenting all the time. But the reality is that I don't. But it feels very, almost sometimes insincere, how I have to respond, because I feel as though I have a particular audience and there's an expectation to respond to my children in a particular way with a certain amount of love and grace and patience, because the person on the phone call with me doesn't have any of the context of actually this is interruption number 754 and I've already answered the question five times.
Yeah, it's again, it's that balance piece that just seems completely impossible. Well, you've all shared some very real examples of your frustrations. So I'm wondering, what skills do you think that you've utilized to overcome these issues? Becca?
So I would say you're very sweet to suggest that we have overcome the issues. I would say that if I needed to assess myself, I could very honestly say that I have not overcome, but have tried to learn how to be okay with where things are at. And I think they're two similar and complementary, but also different things. And so I still feel like the journey isn't over. I think the biggest skill that I have learned is probably to be able to readjust what my expectations are going to be. And that has been very difficult. I tend to be a person who is a high achiever, who really is striving to do my best in everything. And I think one of the biggest skills that I've learned through this and have had to share with the kids as well, is when it's time to say, okay, you know what, this is good enough for today, and good enough is okay today. It doesn't mean that I don't care about my kids or about my job, because I'm very passionate about what I do. It means that this is what I'm able to give. And if I try to give beyond what I have to give, there will be a crash and burn that's going to happen in a week from now. And then I will be able to give nothing to anyone.
Yeah. It's that managing your own expectations, your own learning, your own work, that soft skill.
Yeah, absolutely.
Cynthia, how about you?
Project management skills have played a huge role in how my household runs now. Collaboration with my husband on what he's able to do and what I'm able to do, and what and an agreement on the set tasks. Because I think for a lot of people, it's very easy to think like, oh, I have to get this done. It's going to be a failure on me if I don't do this. And, you know, and I make a joke about like, oh no, I've cleaned the bathroom. I'm waiting for everybody else in the house to clean the bathroom, and then it'll be my turn again. And I'll clean it when it comes back to my turn, which is just my way always of like, you know, sort of pointing like, it's not just my responsibility, whether that's as the wife or the mother or the person who noticed it. And so I think that sort of sharing of responsibility with the other people who can do it doesn't necessarily just mean my husband. It also means that my older child will keep an eye on the time and say, oh, it's time for us to go back to class now, to the little one, and help her log into the right meeting. And that's a really interesting way, I think, to start dividing out the work. And everybody gets some satisfaction when that works. And then like from the project management world, also like risk assessment. We've had to do things now that we wouldn't have done at the very beginning of the pandemic, because, you know, when it felt like the air was poison and we couldn't go outside or we couldn't see somebody in a park or whatever. We've decided that for our family, you know, we're working with other families to do things that we feel are safe, considering the vaccination status and the status of all the people involved, so that we all have something to look forward to. Because one of the things I didn't mention earlier is that like children online, children learning online, at least in my case, don't sleep. They, you know, so when you say, Jackie, that it's constant, that the noise is always there, it really is, like from the moment I wake up, or and sometimes even before it, right through until midnight, because those children aren't going to sleep, and they are going to find me in the night, and they're going to come in, and they're going to need something because they're not getting enough exercise. They've got way too much time online. And they are also dealing with all of the emotions and thoughts and feelings around a pandemic with a brain that is still growing. So I can only imagine the kind of turmoil that this like has them tied up in knots over. And so I had to look at that and the risk of continuing with a very sequestered life for us, and what was at risk if we allowed people in. So if, for instance, we have a really good friend who's also a skating coach who facilitates some play dates for us twice a week. She collects her. My youngest one takes her to a friend's house nearby, and they play outdoors and they get exercise. And because she's, you know, she's this adult is trusted, and she's trained in, you know, like physical activity for children, and she has first aid, and I know, you know, and I know how passionate it she is about the well-being of our children. I know she would never do anything that would put them into harm. And is that like that, but that is also not without risk, right? Like she could have been exposed, and now I'm exposing my family. But to me, the risk is worth it. And what it does is, you know, if it hits the reset button for the children as well, right? Reset the next morning, they're like her schedule changed those 2 days a week. She had something refreshing and new. She had something to look forward to at the end of the school day. So if I just stay on and do this one last thing, I'll have that fun time with my coach and my friend. And so that risk management and assessment piece has really come into play. It's a lot easier now that people have vaccines. It's a lot easier now that we're dealing with a variant that is not as terrifying as earlier ones. But it is still something, and it's something that I worry again, like now my parenting is on display, right? Because you had to make those overtures to another parent, like, oh, are you comfortable with this? You know, well, okay, if they play inside because it's really cold, do they wear masks? What kind of mask? What if they have to go in to use a washroom? You know, like you have to navigate all of these things. But I think as someone who manages for a living, those are skills that I really have to put in place in my personal life to get through this.
Yeah, and I don't think you said this word, but we have talked about this before. I think the critical thinking skills that are required because of the mental load that has been put on us. I mean, we are maxed. Like I can't think of another time in my life where I have had so many balls in the air. Julia, you commented on it earlier, how, you know, someone in your house could ask you a question and get, if they've asked to do something, to see someone, to go somewhere. Well, if they ask you in one moment, it might be one thing. Another time, 4 hours later, the answer could be completely different. And this is because we are constantly pivoting with the information coming in. What are my responsibilities? Who do I have to be today? You know, what matters? And this, we have just really had to reflect on our own values. And sometimes that reflection just constantly has to happen depending on how the situation changes. Yeah. Who else has something to say about skills they've had to utilize during this time of supporting their kids in online learning? Nope. Oh, Julia.
I think with the main thing with the online learning is just being, how do you say it? Just being more open with my kids about my emotional state too. And for example, I think it was yesterday, there was a group of people who are meeting at our community outdoor rink that we have at our park, which is amazing. And they're like, we should get pizza and we should get drinks. And then it like kind of just went, and I was like, all of a sudden, I'm not okay with this now. And then explaining to them that my brain cannot compute the risk factors now. Who's going to be there? It's in a public place. There's a 10 limit gathering. People are bringing chairs. People brought chairs. I'm out. Like, it's such an odd thing to be like, we can't go to the party because there's chairs there. Like, how do you explain that to a 7-year-old? So I think not like just being emotionally open with them, which I normally wouldn't, because I'm not a parent who explains my decisions to kids normally. Normally, like, this is what we're doing and get on board and this is what we're doing. But I've had to change my parenting style in a way, because especially with my 7-year-old, he has no reference point. He doesn't have enough reference point in his world to be like, this is so short term in the grand scheme of things. But this is going on year 3. Like, he has no reference point to go back to, really, that it wasn't this way. He's 7. So this started when he was 4. Like, that's crazy. Like, even school-wise, he's only had one full year of kindergarten, JK, and then a few months and he's been off. So he doesn't even know what like regular school is, like consistently with assemblies and clubs, and he has no reference point. And we just keep going on as if he does. And then I have to remember, like, I have to go back to where they're at, because 3 years for us, we have so many reference points in our life that'll be like, we'll get back to that. He doesn't get back to what? He doesn't know what that is even. So it's been interesting to just see my parenting style change with where they're at.
Absolutely. I really need pizza days to come back when we return in school. I really need a day that I don't have to figure out what everyone is going to eat for lunch.
I'm ready to do pizza days, which says a lot.
Yeah. If anything comes out of the, of Omicron and the hopefully moving into an endemic. I hope that they bring back pizza days. It's one of the first things. Anyway, I'm going to move on to the next question. This is specifically for Jackie. Jackie, what literacy skills are required to support family members to learn online? Speaking specifically.
I thought about this a lot while I was teaching online and parenting an online learner. Beside the obvious, being able to read, being able to help with writing, having those digital skills, problem-solving skills to get through those digital problems. Something that isn't talked a lot about in literacy, but is there, is attitude. A parent's attitude towards the whole learning experience. And if they had a terrible learning experience themselves, whether they had an undiagnosed learning disability or they had behaviors that interfered with their learning, or if they were introverts or even extroverts that needed different things in learning and the learning experience was not good for them, just imagine what it would feel like to be the parent of someone doing online learning and being frustrated just at the thought of having to be that support person. And that really worried me. I worried about the parents in my daughter's classroom who were struggling with that, and there was no one to help. So you have grade 8 education and you have to teach your kid grade 8 math. You're not going to remember how to do that. And you're already feeling really bad about yourself. I would just give up. And I'm afraid that might have happened quite a bit. Just give up. I also thought a lot about the parents who didn't have the means to ensure that they had the right iPads and computers and internet, Wi-Fi, how that made them feel, how explaining that to their child made them feel. So we're looking at people who are in poverty. They may have the technical skills and the reading and writing skills, but not the financial skills to completely support their children. And that, again, is a blow to their attitude about the whole situation. It's like a whole other area of just, I can't do this, and I can't do this. And it overwhelms me. It overwhelmed me. I've been talking to my team lately about, let's start an online learning for parents class, how to be an online learner themselves so they can experience it and they can increase their confidence. But they're all so busy, they don't have time to take the class, which is a shame, but maybe the school boards can pick up on that. So yes, I think managing their own learning as a parent and managing their own time as a parent are all literacy skills that come into play outside of the basics.
Yeah, it's very heavy for many families. I mean, our guests today have we've all shared lots of frustrations today, but we all do come from, I think, a place where we have been able to support our kids. And you're talking about families who really, it was an uphill battle, they were at the bottom of the hill, or they are at the bottom of the hill. And so the second part to this question is, what are the impacts, short, medium, long-term impacts on learning for members of those families who aren't able to source the skills?
I know a family who their oldest is autistic, and then they have two neurotypical kids. And their youngest is a heart transplant survivor. Yeah, I mean, wham. Single, both parents live in the home, but only one is working right now. They share one iPad. They can get stuff from the school board, thankfully, and they did. But this round, the oldest is not going to school. The two middle kids are going to school, and the youngest is going to be home for the rest of the year because she doesn't want him coming and going, because she doesn't know who's vaccinated and who's not. And he's on anti-rejection drugs. So there's so many stories out there We're not typical, us moms. There are a lot of stories out there where people are just not coping and learning is just not happening.
Yeah. And I remember before this, when kids used to take the EQAO tests, literacy, we had some literacy networks who would look at that data and they would forecast who would be a literacy learner. It will be interesting to see if those types of assessments return again, what this data will show. And I do know that there was some linkages to the EQAO data and the socioeconomic power of families in those schools. They were more likely to be a literacy learner in the future. So this, I mean, COVID has just thrown another wrench in the barriers to many families in Ontario. So Julia. Oh, everyone has something to say. Okay. Julia, do you want to say something?
Yeah. I was in a meeting with some trustees this week for our school board, and someone brought up the point that from September to December in the schools would have been a really great time to bring back volunteers. Because I know when I was volunteering, a lot of those kids I was reading with happened to come from lower income families who probably are struggling a lot more than, say, my kids are. So not only when they were in school, they were still cut off from their extra reading that they got with volunteers. And then, they're already behind, and that volunteer piece was a huge thing that we're all trying to push to get back. Even pizza days are great, but to fill in that gap, because teachers, as we all know, have too big of classes. These kids are nobody's getting what they need at this point in public schooling. But the volunteer piece to get people back in to support these kids. And it's too bad that the school board didn't gather volunteers to even do one-on-one online with kids. Cause I even offered that to my kids' teachers, that if they could use me in a breakout room, but nothing's been set up to even facilitate that extra little bit of help that those kids need. And that is kind of the only thing they needed to like get to the next level, and they've lost that as well. And they're losing time.
Yeah. Interesting. We had two calls to Literacy Link Niagara this week of parents desperate to find one-to-one online tutoring for their kids through digital learning. So there's definitely a need there. And just echoing the volunteering, supporting reading, one other issue is just access to books, because a lot of low-income houses, they just don't have the number of books. And it's great that the school provides subscriptions to programs like Epic, where kids can read. But I can tell you, my kid doesn't go to bed with their tablet. They go to bed with a book so that they can read until they fall asleep. Cynthia, I know you have something to say.
Yeah, I do. And it's back to Jackie's point. I have to say that this is the first time that our family did more than one day of online learning this last lockdown. So we grossly failed every single time. My kids were not online. They were totally online. They were online all the time, just so they weren't doing any learning. Like the youngest one learned how to read during I think the second I don't even know what lockdown we're on now, but during one of the lockdowns, because she was using voice to text to speak with other children on Roblox. And then it also really helped with her speech therapy, because she would read it back what the iPad understood for her to have said, and then she would fix her articulation if she if they weren't the right words. But we didn't almost know formal online schooling in any of the other online learning opportunities. And my husband and I both have advanced degrees. We both work at universities. education is clearly very important and very formative in our family value system. And even still, even with every single opportunity, the right most up-to-date iPad, you know, like everything a child could possibly want, tons of books, good internet speed, grandparents who could pop in and help out, and all of those things. It was too much on a day-to-day. It was too much to fight the fight and figure it out. I remember at one point I had a list of 7 passwords for one child. One child could have to enter 7 passwords in one day for school. We couldn't do it. Even as somebody who manages a nation, or actually an international organization, I couldn't manage their online learning at the same time. And so, you know, all of this is to say, if somebody is coming out of this not where they could be or should be, or, you know, whatever, it's coming, it's something that's coming from all strata, all social spheres. And I don't know what recovery from that is going to look like. I love Julia's idea of volunteers, because I have to say the one class my youngest never did miss was her one-on-one online speech therapy, because it was one person speaking with her for 30 minutes and she accomplished so much and she felt seen.
Yeah, that's a great example. I feel like we're starting a new initiative here on this podcast. Someone needs to do this. Becca, I know you have something to say about this as well.
Yeah, I think the other thing that has been missing for so many families, Ash, is the extra supports and programs that so many families who are struggling have relied on. So it's less access to breakfast programs, to before and after school programs, to just having a teacher or caregiver's eyes on them. I work with a lot of single parents who have had to work. And so I think we have a lot of kids who probably aren't quite ready to be home by themselves, who haven't had any choice but to be home by themselves, because I think there's been a lot of parents and caregivers placed in what feel like impossible situations, where either if they don't go to work, their work or their job is compromised and there's fear of losing their positions, or they've considered the option of taking some time off, but the supplementary benefit just wasn't going to cover the expenses. And I think there's a whole segment of our population who were already in survival mode before this happened. And I think one of the things I struggled most with, and Ashley, you and I talked about this a little bit at the beginning of the pandemic, was this idea that this awful virus was spread by the rich and impacted people who were struggling the most. And I had a really hard time with wrapping my head around how that could have happened and why we allowed it to happen. And, you know, in early days it was, you know, you can only do curbside pickup. Well, that's great if you have a vehicle. If you don't have a vehicle, then that's problematic, right? And so I think these families have been placed in some just incredibly precarious situations and circumstances where it's like the areas that they were already struggling with have been put under a microscope and just have become this glaring, just area of challenge, where it's like, I already wasn't feeling good about where I was at with things. And now here's another thing that I've got to try and navigate on top of that. And I think, yeah, I think it might've been you, Cynthia, who said it, what does recovery look like? Because I feel like I don't have a good concept of what our end goal is. What is the end game in this? What are we working towards? And I feel like at certain times I felt like I had an idea of sort of what the finish line would look like and done everything that we could as a family to tick off the boxes and do the things. But it feels like every time we inch towards that finish line, the finish line moves. And so as a family, as a two-parent, two-income family with neurotypical kids, so aware of my privilege in that and still finding it really challenging. And I have a secure house over my head. I can't imagine being a child trying to do this, navigating maybe a shelter system or short-term temporary housing or with precarious housing or food insecurities. And I think for so many families, that is so real.
Absolutely. Yeah. Typically I ask a question to all of our guests. I think that we have answered it. So I'm going to summarize it the way that I've heard it. And if anyone wants to jump in, please feel free to do that. So we always ask, what is the system doing well and what could the system do better? I think we have heard that there's a lot that we could do better. Becca's answer, Cynthia's answer, Julia's answer. We all just heard what the system could do better. I just want to end on what is the system doing well? I think the system of people who are living in a pandemic are surviving. And I think that people are moving forward. They are adapting. They are reflecting on what matters and making changes that will impact the rest of their lives. We hear often that our kids have been very resilient, and we applaud them for that. I think it's really important that as parents, that we applaud ourselves as well, that we have gained skills that we never thought we would needed and that we would need. And we are almost in a renaissance of skill building. And I think that that is an amazing thing, because I do believe that this pandemic will become an endemic in the next 6 months. I think that I'm hoping that this is the last hurrah. So friends, I want to thank you and appreciate your honesty and your reflection today. It's a very, very heavy topic. Let's hope this is COVID's last hurrah. We have highlighted a digital and skills and socioeconomic divide today in this episode. We usually think of skills as reading, writing, math, and technology. Clearly, our conversations today have highlighted time management as an issue, working with others, critical thinking, problem solving, self-care, space, professional and work divide, work-life balance. We have all had these skills tested, but we continue to move forward to support those that we love. So thanks for listening, listeners, and we look forward to getting connected with you next time.